What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the News Podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. And we're going to do a solo edition of the podcast today. We couldn't get anyone else on, so I figured I promised I'd get a podcast out every week. And I apologize for not getting one out last week. We actually had recorded that podcast on Sunday evening. And when I put the audio in the editor, it just completely disappeared and I could not find the audio anymore. So I apologize for that. It is really frustrating because we recorded like a good 40-minute podcast. And I didn't want to waste anybody else's time by bringing them back on again. So I figured, let's just wait till end of this week and we'll start. And we have a couple real games that actually matter to break down today. And I'm really excited to talk about it. So the first game of the week is obviously against the Los Angeles Lakers. And James Harden looked amazing to start the game off. Like a mini version of Steve Nash. 9 assists in the first quarter, which was just amazing. Basketball Twitter was freaking out. And the Rockets offense looked awesome. It was clicking on all cylinders. They just couldn't miss shots, and they just looked really, really well in that first quarter and that first half in general. James Harden was facilitating the basketball like crazy, and I think he had like 12 or 13 assists at the halftime, which was just stupid. And there was some talk about James Harden possibly breaking the Scott Stiles assist in a game record, and you know, obviously that didn't happen, but he was really well to start the game, facilitating the basketball left and right. And what I really liked about this was James was giving the ball off in the beginning of the offense. And that is something he did not do at all in his tenure in Houston. Just giving the basketball up right away and, you know, moving. And that's something we talked about in the offseason on this podcast, was whether or not James Harden could do that. And he did. He did. And it looked really... It looked like James Harden and Mike D'Antoni. Like, it feels like it's a match made in heaven. And, you know, we debated the D'Antoni hire when it happened. And, I asked this during the game. Like, is it possible that D'Antoni and Harden were just meant for each other? Like, maybe this was the right hire all along if we were going to unlock this part of James Harden's game, this amazing facilitating part of James Harden's game. And just highlighting it and making James the point guard right away. Like, was that the right hire from the start? I'm not ready to go there yet. Like, I still think the Rockets should have went after a disciplinarian, but maybe I was wrong. You know, I'm willing to entertain it now because he looks really good in this offense, and D'Antoni knows exactly what to do with him. And this just feels like a role he was made for. Like, these guys are just meant to play with each other, D'Antoni and Harden. This is just, it feels right. And this game reflected that, especially the first half particularly. Some notes, the first wing to check in was KJ McDaniels. And, you know, that was surprising to me because he checked in over Corey Brewer. And to me, that was a improvement. It was subtle, but it was very, very significant in terms of having the best wing, the wing that's impressed the most in the preseason, come off your bench in the preseason. And, you know, KJ did not finish the game with more minutes than Corey Brewer. D'Antoni leaned on Brewer a little bit more than KJ. But it was progress that, you know, he was trusted to come off the bench right away. It's just something of note. James Harden was just ridiculous in this game. I was in the middle of the game and I was just like laughing at how good he looked in this offense. Some other notable things: Tyler Ennis did not look good in this game. Tyler Ennis I remember there was a possession where he was dribbling baseline. And if you ever played basketball before, if you ever like played organized basketball, you're taught, especially if you're a point guard, you should know this. Do not dribble into a baseline. It's just so stupid. So Tyler Ennis, backup point guard for the Rockets, dribbled into the baseline. He got trapped and he made the pass. He turned the ball over. And, this is the guy the Rockets trusted over Pablo Brigioni. Pablo Brigioni was cut so the Rockets could keep Tyler Ennis. And, you know, at the time of this game, like and even still today, like, there was legitimate questions as to whether that was the right decision. Like, I preferred the steady hand that Pablo Brigioni gave you. Pablo Brigioni gave you steady minutes off the bench. He was a guy who could dribble, not turn over, semi-run the offense, but somebody who could just dribble and bring the ball up. Just a steady, someone you could trust, you know, and that sounds very old school, very old-timey saying that. It sounds very weird because normally I'm all in on the upside guy, but, you know, Tyler Ennis just did not look very good in the preseason, and to earn a spot over Pablo Brigioni was very bizarre to me. But yeah, he was not very good in this game, and I'm not gonna master that at all. And yeah, something else notable from the game: Trevor Ariza. I saw him dive for a loose ball during the middle of the game, and that stuck out to me like significantly, because that showed to me that he actually gives a damn this year. Like, he gives a damn about this basketball team this year. And that's something that you couldn't say last year. He checked out very early in the season, and he stopped caring. He stopped playing defense. He stopped going after those loose balls. He stopped trying to get those steals. And he dove for a steal this game. And, you know, it's very minor, but these are the little things you start to notice when you're evaluating the character of this team and whether these guys actually give a damn, because, you know, last year this team did not give a damn. And, you know, and stuff like that was very encouraging to see. And I'm checking right now, and James Harden had 14 assists at the half, and that was tied for John Lucas's record. Absolutely insane. John Lucas obviously set the franchise record for the Rockets. And yeah, and, you know, this MVP race, it's going to be very, very interesting this year. My pick is still Kawhi, but I'm very, very interested. If you noticed, as soon as the season started, all these superstars just completely went off. Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Damian Lillard, James Harden, all these guys completely went off to start the regular season. And it's going to be interesting, this MVP race. I'm going to venture that's going to go to the most winning candidate, and right as of this moment, it seems like that's going to be Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs, and or LeBron James and the Cavaliers, obviously. But I'm leaning towards Kawhi. I think he's going to make that next leap. But still, I think Harden has a chance this year for it. There's still a lot of talk about him possibly leading the league in assists and points this year, which is, I think is ridiculous. Like, a lot of the national media is saying this, and I just don't think it's going to happen. I think James Harden's not going to score as many points as he did last year in terms of a per-game basis. You know, I was talking about this with Paul in an earlier podcast, Paul, a.k.a. at Rocket Intellect on Twitter, and we were debating on what kind of stat line we could see from Harden, and I'm kind of backing off the 30 points per game thing, because I think Harden's probably going to focus his attention more on getting assists this year, and I don't think James Harden's going to play as many minutes this year, because I think having Eric Gordon is going to reduce the load on how much playmaking he's going to have to do this year. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. The MVP race is going to be as interesting as it's ever been this year. And yeah, some other things from this game. Nene played a lot. He played 23 minutes this game, or 22 minutes this game, and he was a minus 10. He did not look good this game. And D'Antoni trusted him in crunch time minutes over Clint Capela, and that really, really bothered me, because I think Clint Capela has earned that crunch time spot over Nene, and I think he played better in this game. Clint Capela was a plus 12, Nene was a minus 10, and yeah, and I think the focus should be to play Nene as much as, not Nene, to play as Clint Capela as much as possible with James Harden, because I think it maximizes both their strengths to play in the pick and roll together. And I think just Clint Capela is just a lot better when he plays with Harden, when he's on the floor with him. And I think Nene could destroy second units, and I think that should be really his goal this year. But yeah, a lot of exciting stuff from KJ, a lot of exciting stuff from Harden. And the Rockets were just very bad defensively in this game, especially in transition. In transition, they were terrible. And Ryan Anderson, man, I know Ryan Anderson's like possibly one of the worst power forward defenders in the league. We had Kelly Scaletta on earlier this summer to discuss Ryan Anderson, and Ryan Anderson, he's a hell of a shooter, but God, this guy's really bad on defense. And that's not because of a lack of effort, man. His feet are just way too slow. His lateral quickness is just not there to be a good defender or even an average defender. He's terrible. He causes a lot of breakdowns. And this bench unit did not look good in this Los Angeles Lakers game. The Rockets need Demo. The Rockets badly need Demo and Beverly back. The depth of the bench without Beverly and Demo, particularly the bench unit isn't going to have Beverly in there, but having Beverly start pushes Eric Gordon back to the bench unit. And in this game, I think they badly needed Eric Gordon on the bench unit or Demo, because this bench unit did not have any playmaking this game, and it showed. So the big story, the Rockets were really bad in the glass. Really, they got out-rebounded by the Lakers, which was quite frankly pretty embarrassing. And towards the end of the game, it was very frustrating watching Julius Randle get offensive rebounds and just throw it up and get like really flukish buckets. It was really frustrating to watch. You had to watch the game. He was getting offensive rebounds towards the end of the game because the Rockets could not get a defensive board, and he would just throw something up at the rim and it would go in. It was so stupid. And The Lakers ended up getting the lead in the fourth quarter and winning by 4 points. It was not encouraging. It scared the living hell out of me. This game, I'll admit, it scared the living hell out of me. And big takeaways from this game: the Rockets badly need some bench depth, and that starts with getting Patrick Beverly back on the floor and inserting him to the starting lineup so Eric Gordon can move to the bench unit, because putting Eric Gordon on that bench unit is going to dramatically increase his production, and staggering Harden and Gordon is going to be really, really beneficial to the Rockets long-term offensively. And I think having Demo possibly come back is going to benefit them. Although I'm not too optimistic on both sides getting a deal done. I'm not trusting on Demo's agent. It seems like he values Demo more than most NBA teams because nobody's offered him a contract. And also another takeaway from this game, the Rockets badly need to improve on the defensive glass. Also another takeaway, Mike D'Antoni has some weird fetish with Nene, and I don't know what it is, but he seems to play Nene in crunch time a lot more than Clint Capela, and I just don't think that's right. I think Clint Capela needs to be out there in crunch time with James Harden as much as possible, because both players benefit from being on the court together because they're such good pick and roll partners. It's weird. I don't know what it is with Nene, but I guess he's a veteran, and coaches tend to trust their veterans more than their young guys. But yeah, and there seems to be some talk about Clint Capela's conditioning, and that's why they're limiting his minutes to around 25 minutes per game. So yeah, that's something to look out for. And something that got tweeted at me very, very frequently this weekend, like around four or five times, is Nene the new Corey Brewer? God, I hope not. God, I hope not. Thankfully, Nene is much, much better than Corey Brewer. But in terms of overplaying Nene, I hope that's not the case this year. We still have a long season left, so we'll see how this works out. I think Clint Capela is slowly earning the trust of Mike D'Antoni, because Nene's minutes are being dropped a little bit, and it seems like Mike D'Antoni is doing the right thing with Clint Capela. But we'll see. We'll see how this goes coming in the coming. But this game scared the living hell out of me. This loss to the Lakers, because particularly how bad the Rockets were defensively, they were just awful in transition. And in the half court, they weren't great either. They could not stop D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson. Those two guards just feasted on the Rockets. And that starts with James Harden and Eric Gordon. And that's something they needed to step up on. And I think they did in the next game. But yeah, it was very much a concern, especially the defensive glass. Because if you can't get defensive boards, man, you're not going to win games in the NBA, no matter how damn good your offense is, because you need defensive boards to stop possessions. And if the other team is just getting nonstop offensive rebounds and just scoring on you, you're not going to be able to outscore them. You're not going to be able to outscore them and win games. Also, I was kind of concerned as to how the Rockets would bounce back from this game, because last year's Rockets team, as soon as they faced adversity, they'd crawl up into a ball and go on a losing streak. And that's something I tweeted out on Twitter, and a lot of you agreed with that. Last year's Rockets team just did not have a spine. And they, you know, at the first sign of adversity, they, you know, crumble up into a little ball. And I was worried that might happen next game. And I know it sounds like an overstatement being the second game of the year, but I consider that game in Dallas to be a must win, because to me it was a gut check time. It was gut check time for Houston to see whether or not this team was different from last year as far as character wise, persona wise. You know, do these guys actually have a spine this year? You know, does this team actually have some backbone? Can this team take a loss and not just completely crumble and, you know, and keep the train going? And it seems like that's the case, that they're fine. They're fine. And I might have overreacted, which I'll be the first to admit I was wrong. And I'm happy I was wrong. I'm happy that this team seems to bounce back from adversity much better than last year's team. That's a testament to the coaching staff. That's a testament to the players taking a step up this year. So, yeah, game two against the Mavericks in Dallas. First couple get plays of the game. Andrew Bogut tried to take advantage of a much younger, thinner Clint Capella, and it did not work. One of the possessions is actually an air ball. And, yeah, Capella has a thin frame, but he can guard bulky post defenders this year, which was something I was concerned about last year. Which I don't think he was able to maintain guys like that last year. And I think the weight and strength he's put on is helping him defend guys like that. And yeah, it's encouraging. It's encouraging. Also, something that concerned me in this game, the first couple possessions, the first couple offensive possessions were used for Trevor Ariza fadeaway post-ups. And that's something Trevor Ariza should just not be doing at all. Like, I don't even need to elaborate on it. Just stop. Don't do it. That's very inefficient. Not only for you, but for most NBA players. Stop doing it. And in a Mike D'Antoni offense, I was very surprised to see that. And, you know, I'm hoping this is not a thing, because I saw it in the Lakers game once, and I saw it in this game twice. I'm hoping it's not a thing. But, yeah, it may have been that the Lakers were switching, and Trevor Ariza was trying to take advantage of a you know, a smaller guard. But still, just stop. Don't do that. Stop. Don't do that. Let's not see that again. Rockets Twitter does not want to see it. I don't want to see it. It's not a good basketball play. Don't do that. Some other things from this game. The offense did not look as good in this game as it had in that Lakers game to start the game. James Harden was not facilitating the same way he had in that Lakers game. And you can't do that every game, obviously. Harden can't get like 17 assists a game every night. But he did play well. He started off the game very slow, and the offense accordingly was very slow. Corey Brewer missed a couple bad layups, and it was very frustrating. I wanted to break my TV. And Tyler Ennis, surprisingly enough, he had a good game. He had a good game. He did not do anything stupid. He did not turn the ball over. He did a good deal of facilitating for a backup point guard, and he played well. I'm gonna give you your credit, Tyler Ennis. I'm gonna give you your credit. You played like crap in that first game, and I'm gonna call you out on it. But this game, you played well, and you deserve to get your credit for it. Job well done. Job well done. And again, I would love more than anything to be wrong about Tyler Ennis. I want him to prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, Tyler Ennis, that you have the capability to be a good backup point guard in this league. And yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's possible. Also, in the second half of this game, Harden went absolutely berserk. To start the game, he was obviously not shooting the ball particularly well, but in the second half, he went just crazy, especially from the 3-point line. He hit like 3 3-pointers in a row in the third quarter. He has some nice floaters, and that surprised me. Does James Harden have a floater this year? If he does, I'm excited, because James Harden was not very good at floaters last year. But if he added that to his game, I'm in. I want to see James Harden expand his offensive repertoire as good as it is right now. And he just went into complete screw it mode. He just went into complete screw it. I'm taking over the offense, and that's just the most fun James Harden to watch. He went bonkers. And Trevor Ariza was really, really good in this game. 27 points, 8 of 12 from the field, 5 of 7 from the 3-point line, 4 rebounds, plus 7 in terms of plus minus. He was really, really good. Give him his credit. And on defense, he was really spectacular. He was dabbing for loose balls again. And I think Trevor Ariza gives a damn this year. And Matt Moore wrote about it in a Rockets piece today. I think Trevor Ariza is reinvigorated, and that's what Matt Moore was writing in this column, and I agree with him. I think under Mike D'Antoni, it seems like he's having a rebirth, because last year he was absolutely terrible, and this year he's trying hard on defense. He's trying, he's shooting better on offense, and let's hope this lasts. Obviously, the shooting is unsustainable, but the defense certainly can be, and the hustle can be. And also, James Harden was good defensively in this game. He was hustling. He did miss a couple of closeouts, and he did have a couple of slip-ups, but for the most part, he was hustling on defense, and I was happy to see that. The offense was not going to crap when Harden was on the bench, and that's a big, big takeaway for me. If the offense can stay good when James Harden sits, that's just a huge positive, and I'm glad in this game it seemed like Mike D'Antoni did not eat Harden as much, and he opted to rest Harden towards the end of the game, and I like that decision because you don't want to be playing him 38-plus minutes a night. Contrary to what JBB might tell you, you can't be playing Harden this much. And, he only ended the game with 35 minutes, which is, I guess, is fair. And I think with Beverly out, you have to find your opportunities to rest him during the game. And I like how the Rockets, to Mike D'Antoni, took some time to rest Harden in the fourth quarter before putting him back into it to ice off the game. So yeah, the Rockets were solid all around. They were much better in transition defense this game. Nene was much better. KJ was really, really good. And just defensively, they were fine. They were much better than they were in Los Angeles. They weren't world beaters. Like, they certainly weren't performing at a high level defensively, but they were performing well enough to win this game. Offensively, they were good, and I think that first game scared me to a fault. I think I overreacted that first game because they did make a lot of key mistakes. So as not to excuse that first game, that you can't excuse that, how bad losing to the Los Angeles Lakers, one of the first teams in the NBA. But hey. So yeah, the Rockets were solid all around. I think I probably overreacted from that first game, but it scared me. You anybody in that position, you have to admit, after watching last year's Rockets team, that first game smelled of last year's Rockets team, and it scared the living hell out of me, and I'm glad they were able to put it together defensively this game. Mike D'Antoni actually praised Jeff Bezdelic in the post-game press conference, and yeah, they got a solid win over the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas, and now they play Dallas tomorrow night. When you're listening to this, it'll be tonight in Houston, and hopefully they'll be able to get another win here. Although Rick Carlisle is very good at in-game adjustments, and they'll have a night to look at film. So it's going to be an entertaining game. I think it'll be a lot closer than what people anticipate. So yeah, good win over the Dallas Mavericks. And the Rockets are now 1-1 to start the season. So the second half of this podcast is going to be devoted to the James Harden trade. And we are 2 days removed at the time of this recording from the James Harden trade taking place. The James Harden trade happened October 27th, 2012. And very famous trade, probably one of the biggest trades in NBA history. Not only franchise history for the Rockets, but NBA history. We're going to be talking about the James Harden trade for years and years and years. For a multitude of reasons, we're going to be talking about it from the Rockets' angle. We're going to be talking about it from the Oklahoma City Thunder angle and how that impacted the franchise. And we're going to be talking about this forever. There's going to be books. There's going to be documentaries. There's going to be 30 for 30s on this trade. This trade was absolutely monumental for both sides, and it was just insane. So this offseason is going to be known forever as the summer James Harden was traded to the Rockets, right? And that's going to be what it's going to be known for when we look back at this summer in 20, 30, 40 years, right? That's going to be what the summer is known for. I'm going to recognize the summer of 2012 as a summer Daryl Morey lost his mind. And I'm going to have to censor this podcast, but it was just so fascinating to watch Daryl Morey operate with his back against the wall this summer, because let's make this clear. Daryl Morey was absolutely on the chopping block this summer. His job was very much on the line. The local radio was absolutely killing him. There was whispers of, you know, ownership being unhappy of, you know, the direction of the franchise just being on this constant treadmill. And yeah, Leslie Alexander was a competitive guy. I mean, he still is a competitive guy, and he wanted this team to acquire a superstar, and he wanted this team to also consequently not tank. And that made it very difficult for Darryl to do his job. And his hands were kind of tied behind his back, but he managed to do it by over the years doing these minor trades. Like looking back at it, like it's very interesting. Looking at as I said, there's going to be books written on the James Harden trade from the Daryl Morey angle as well, because, you know, Daryl Morey used to do these 95 cents for dollar trades, like, all the time. He used to just trade these, you know, I'm going to give you three quarters, you give me a dollar back. He used to do these trades all the time, every summer, and nobody really blinked an eye. And what was really happening here was, you know, he was flipping and flipping and flipping and getting better assets and better assets and better assets. And at the time, you know, watching it at a micro level, it's very hard to recognize this as what he was doing, but when you look back at it, that's absolutely what he was doing. He was just flipping picks, flipping players, getting better picks, better players over and over and over again until he found the right combination of players to land him a superstar. And again, nobody in the fan base, it became pretty known that the Rockets had a huge pile of assets by the fan base and the national media at a certain point. During this summer, that's when it became evidently known. But the summers prior, nobody knew what the hell Darryl was doing, you know. And he got scrutinized like crazy by the radio, you know. And I remember at this time, I still listened to the sports radio, and, you know, specifically 610 and 790 here in Houston, and those guys were absolutely killing him. Specifically 610, those guys were. I think this is when Josh Ennis was still on the radio in Houston. I'm not particularly sure. I think it was Josh Ennis. And there was actually one interview, it might have been with Josh Ennis, where Daryl Morey and Josh got into a huge argument over, you know, Josh was like, you're not doing anything with this freaking franchise, right? You're not doing anything. We're going into this year with Jeremy Lin as our best player. And basically, we're not winning a championship this year. You need to stop acting like you're increasing our odds to win a championship. Because Daryl always used to have this line, like, we do everything in our power to increase our chances of winning a championship. You know, that's his signature line. And I'm sure that's what he's trying to do. But, from a fan base perspective and from the local radio guys, it's frustrating to hear that over again. It's frustrating, especially when you're not getting results. And I'll be honest, at this time, I wanted Darryl to get fired. I did not trust Morey. I didn't think he was, you know, a very good general manager at this time. I thought he was a little bit overrated, and I did not understand what made him such a genius. And this summer is what really turned me, not just for the James Harden trade, but just the sheer collection of assets and how aggressive he was going after these guys. You know, the Rockets were in trade rumors for everybody. And that starts with, you know, Dwight Howard, Andrew Bynum, Tyreek Evans, everybody. And James Harden, although there was a rumor, I remember, of James Harden being talked about, shopped with the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. And I saw that rumor, and I kind of did not pay any attention to it. Because at the time, again, James Harden was not the James Harden we know today. And you know, he was not a superstar. He was looked at as a possibly, maybe, if he got his own team, maybe he'd be an all-star. But, I mean, the thought of him having his own team, I mean, he just came off a Sixth Man of the Year award. Like, let's lower our role here, right? He was, I mean, essentially, if you look at him now, I guess the best comparison for him would be, probably be Lou Williams from the Lakers. And a much better Lou Williams, immediately say that right off the bat. Lou Williams is Sixth Man of the Year, much better, much more efficient, much better at getting the basket, much better three-point shooter. So that's the best comparison I could think of off the top of my head. That's what he was thought of at the time. He was just a Lou Williams, right? He was a very, very good sixth man, not much more than that. And he was, you know, part of the Thunder's big four, I guess. The Serge Ibaka at the time was considered in that big four. It was Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, and, you know, Serge Ibaka. And so the Thunder had some financial decisions they had to make. They're essentially choosing because the way the salary cap was structured, you know, the Thunder did not want to, they wanted to avoid the repeater luxury tax. And to, in order to do that, they had to choose between Serge Ibaka and James Harden. And they chose Serge Ibaka, right, to keep him. And, you know, it's going to be debated for years and years on end whether or not that was the right decision. I understand what Sam Presti was trying to do. In my opinion, Serge Ibaka was such a big part of that Thunder team. And you could make the argument that, you know, he was more important in terms of an impact standpoint, impacting the defense and offense than James Harden. I guess, you know, it'd be a very loose argument, but I think that argument could be made because how good Serge Ibaka was back then. He was legitimately a defensive player of the year candidate year in and year out. He's since declined a little bit, but we have to realize just how good Serge Ibaka was back then. And that was the choice that the Thunder were making, and they were trying to avoid the repeater tax again. The way the salary cap was structured coming off of LeBron's free agency, you know, the NBA did not want these super teams to, you know, form. And in order to do that, they came up with the luxury tax and the repeater tax. And that really penalized teams like the Thunder, who had these onslaughts of talent. So they had this huge assemblance of talent. It was a small market. And they basically could not afford to pay all these guys. And so that's the reason they traded James Harden, along with a multitude of other things. I think guys, somebody like Royce Young would probably be a better, you know, somebody better to discuss this from in terms of the Thunder perspective. But that's essentially what they were trying to do. They were trying to avoid the repeater tax. And again, this was the summer Daryl Morey lost his mind. And I say that because the moves he made, like I'm looking at the transactions from that summer. Okay, so here were the free agents that year. The players that were on the Rockets that became free agents: Earl Boykins, Marcus Camby, Goran Dragic, who the Rockets really wanted to keep, and Courtney Lee. And the Rockets really wanted to keep Goran Dragic, but I think the debate was over a guaranteed year. It was over a player option. Goran Dragic wanted a player option in his contract, and at the time, the Rockets just did not do player options. They were all about team flexibility. If you wanted an option on your contract, it was going to be a team option, and that was not going to fly with the Rockets. So, and I think that's what it was about. And so Goran Dragic left, and also that summer, Dinas Mataunas and Terrence Jones signed multi-year deals with the Rockets. And the Rockets withdrew their qualifying offer to Courtney Lee. There's a whole bunch of transactions the Rockets made. Kyle Lowry was traded to the Raptors in exchange for Gary Forbes and a first-round draft pick that Toronto owned, and a trade exception. And Marcus Camby, they got Marcus Camby for Tony Douglas, Josh Hamilton, Jerome Jordan, a 2014-12 second round draft pick that New York owned, and a 2015 second round draft pick. So they were making all these trades, and also one of the bigger trades that they made, not the bigger moves that they made, was they signed Jeremy Lin to a 3-year restricted free agent offer sheet. Right, that they gave him a $21 million deal over 3 years, and it was a balloon payment in the second and third years, and so his contract was not a straight-up $7 million per year contract. It exploded in the last 2 years. And the way New York was structured, New York's salary cap, they could not afford to pay him that much money because of the amount of tax these guys would have to pay. It was really debated as to whether or not James Dolan was willing to pay this kind of contract to Jeremy Lin and deal with that luxury tax. And, you know, it seemed like, in the beginning, James Dolan would match any contract offer because that's what they told Jeremy Lin coming into restricted free agency. And the Rockets took their bluff and they gave him this ridiculous payment, with the balloon payment obviously being the kicker. And it made it very, very hard for the New York Knicks to match, and they didn't match. And so Jeremy Lin became a Houston Rocket. And at the time, probably the best player on the team. I don't think that's a stretch to say, considering Chandler Parsons hadn't come into his own. So Jeremy Lin was your best player going into 2012, right? The 2012 season. Perhaps Kevin Martin, but it was basically Jeremy Lin, right? And the Rockets amnestied Luis Scola, which really told you that they were in for something. They were trying to make a big move. They were clearing salary cap space, and they were trying to basically trade for a big free agent. And they traded. They made some other big trades that summer. They traded Courtney Lee for a few draft picks. I can't exactly remember what draft picks they were, but I believe it was a second round draft pick or a late first round draft pick, and that was essentially what the Rockets had. The Rockets had three first round draft picks, right? So they went ahead and drafted Royce White, Jeremy Lamb, and Terrence Jones, and Jeremy Lamb just balled out in the summer league, and same with Royce White, and you know, these guys really, really increased their trade value in summer league. And like Jeremy Lamb was looked at like I'm not kidding in on the Rockets forums and stuff. And you know, if you look on Clutch Fans forums from 2012, like people were comparing, like it was very stupid. Like I wasn't ready to make these comparisons, but like, people were comparing him to like the second coming of Tracy McGrady, right? The next great shooting guard that the Rockets are going to have and build around. Like Jeremy Lamb was looked at as like a really, really, like he was like a stud, right? Like everybody loved Jeremy Lamb. And it was assumed that any trade the Rockets made for a superstar this summer, it would revolve around Jeremy Lamb and probably Kevin Martin, right? That was going to be the package you were going to give up for a superstar. And so the Rockets got into the Rockets had these three free agents. These three draft picks. They had Royce Wright, they had Jeremy Lamb, and they had Terrence Jones, and they impressed in the summer league, and that was basically a showcase for their trade assets, right? And teams around the league started to take notice, and the Rockets started to become major players in the Dwight Howard sweepstakes. And this was a big story in the summer of 2012. Dwight Howard was one at the time still considered one of the best five players in the NBA, and to make a move for him was a big time move. He was the best player in the NBA by a long shot. He was out that year with I think he was out with the back, and so yeah, it was really awkward that summer with Dwight. He had the interview with Stan Van Gundy. Everybody remembers that at St. You know, Stan Van Gundy has the Diet Coke in his hands, and Dwight Howard. He's asked about Dwight Howard demanding he be fired, and he flat out admits, yeah, he wants to be fired. And Dwight Howard walks in, and it becomes a really awkward situation. Everybody remembers how that video kind of went viral at that time, and yeah, Dwight Howard wanted out of Orlando, and it was very apparent that he wanted to either go to Brooklyn, Los Angeles, or Atlanta. Those were the three places he wanted to go to. No ifs, ands, or buts. And teams outside of that list were not going to get a very good shot at getting a deal done, because Dwight was basically throwing his weight around. And the Rockets were still aggressive after Dwight. Even after that list, his agent, I think Dan Fagan was his agent at the time, and he leaked the list of destinations that he'd want to go to, and the Rockets did not make that list, and it really disappointed a lot of Rockets fans. But surprisingly, the Rockets still went after him with much aggression, and you know, it became a real argument on Rockets forums, right? Because at the time, you know, Twitter was not as big as it is now. It was still very, very, it was still pretty big, but it wasn't as big as it is now, was flush with Rockets fans, right? So where you argued your debates was the Clutch Fans forums. That's why Clutch Fans is like the most well-respected Rockets blog in all of Rockets Twitter. And so yeah, that's where all the debates went down, and there was legitimate debate as to whether or not the Rockets should trade for Dwight Howard or Andrew Bynum, because of course Andrew Bynum was also on the trade market that year, and he was definitely getting dealt. Like he was out of there, and same with Dwight. Those guys wanted to leave their situations, and Andrew Bynum wanted his own team. Dwight wanted a better situation, and yeah, those guys were throwing their weight around like crazy, and you know, the big discussion on Rockets forums were like, you know, what should we go after, right? And Dwight was clearly the better player, but he did not want to come here. And with him becoming a free agent the following year, it was like whether or not you were able to keep him, right? Like, if you traded for him, would you be able to keep him? And that was a big question as far as on the forums, right? Like, that was the big topic. And everybody, I think the vast majority of Rockets fans preferred Andrew Bynum for that reason, because by all indications, he would probably re-sign with the Rockets if they had traded for him. And I think Dwight Howard went out and flat out like leaked that he would not re-sign with the Rockets if they had traded for him. And so even with all that going on, they still were active in the Dwight Howard sweepstakes. And eventually, Dwight was traded to Los Angeles. And this was a huge bummer, because I think this trade involved Andrew Bynum and the Sixers. And the Lakers might have dealt Andrew Bynum to the Sixers beforehand. And so, yeah, it created a lot of negativity towards Daryl Morey and the organization, because this was supposed to be the summer the Rockets got a superstar, and this was supposed to be the summer Daryl Morey got the job done and flipped those assets for an actual tangible superstar. And there was a lot of heat from the Rockets fan base and local radio, and I cannot stress enough how big local radio was in the 2012 media market for the Rockets. Because this was basically where Rockets fans got their most of their news and most of their opinions on the Rockets. Because at the time, there was no, I mean, Twitter was around. I'm not trying to make it seem as though Twitter was not around, but I was not on Twitter. A lot of fans weren't on Twitter. Facebook was definitely a thing, and so there were Facebook pages, but there was no central place where Rockets fans could get their opinions from, and it was basically from local radio where you got your 24/7 Rockets, you know, trade updates, because that's where a lot of fans got their updates from. That's where I got my news from. That's where I got my, you know, I was signed up for the text line from, I think, Sports Talk 790. They'd send you a text if anything ever happened with the Rockets, and that's basically how I received all my news. I'd get a text about, Dwight Howard's agent leaks X, Y, and Z are his preferred destinations. I'd get a text about the Rockets being interested in Andrew Bynum. I'd get a text about them being interested in Tyreke Evans. You'd get a text from these local radio stations with your news, and that's where I got a lot of my news. I listened to a lot of local radio, and I'm ashamed to say that now because I'm not the biggest fan of local radio nowadays, but yeah, I listened to a lot of local radio, a lot of local sports radio back then, and I listened to a lot of 610, and those guys were killing Daryl Morey for not getting a deal done with Andrew Bynum and Dwight Howard, and it was basically, you know, those guys were basically running Morey out of town, and this was basically assumed after this summer, Morey was out of there. Like, there was no way in hell Morey was going to retain his job after the summer of 2012. Like in the summer of 2013, it was like a foregone conclusion that Morey was going to be fired. I'm not exaggerating this, man. You can look back, at that time. You can look back at articles on the amount of heat he had. You can look back at the forums. His rope was done. Like he had reached the end of his rope. And at the time, I was not a big fan of Daryl Morey. Again, I did not buy into this analytics model. I did not buy into, the way he constructed teams, and he came from that Danny Ainge of school of flipping assets for superstars, right? Like flipping, and then getting good enough assets to trade for superstars. And so that's basically where he got the influence. That's basically where he got the idea of trading Harden, right? Trading for a superstar and eventually turning that superstar into James Harden. And so I'm going to go ahead and fast forward to when the trade actually happened. So we're going into preseason and the season with the idea that your roster is going to be Jeremy Lin, Kevin Martin, Omer Asik, Chandler Parsons, who was not proven to be as good as he eventually ended up being at the time. You know, like nobody had a strong opinion on Chandler Parsons at the time. Omer Asik, Jeremy Lin, and you know, Kevin Martin. Those were your biggest free agent signees. Jeremy Lin and Omer Asik, those were your guys. That's who you got the deal done with this summer. And again, this was supposed to be the summer that Daryl Morey got a superstar, and he walked out of there with Jeremy Lin, Nomer Ashik. So understandably, the fan base was absolutely pissed. And there was a lot of talk about how this team is probably going to tank. This was supposed to be the year Leslie Alexander and the organization finally tanks to get a first round draft pick. And remember, they tried to trade in the first round to get Andre Drummond that summer also with their collection of assets. Again, they were so desperate for that superstar, and they believed Andre Drummond was going to be that superstar. They were all in on tanking. It seemed like they were going to finally tank this year, or ride that train of mediocrity. So it's October 27th, preseason's over, and the roster is basically set in stone, right? You can make trades, but it seems like the Rockets are done. Like, they're done making moves. They got Jeremy Lin, they got Omer Asik, and, you know, they have their young collection of talent in Jeremy Lamb, Royce White, and Terrence Jones, and they're going to roll the season. They're going to start the season off, and they're probably going to do what they always do and probably finish, you know, 38 to 40 wins, try to make the playoffs, right? That's essentially the Rockets' fate. Possibly tank. That was a theory that was thrown out a lot. And it's basically, there's not much optimism going into this season. It's basically the same old stuff we get every year, and the Rockets had not landed their superstar, right? And this is one of those moments in Rockets franchise history where you absolutely remember where you were when this happened, and NBA history too, because this is a major, major trade in NBA history. So I'm at a gym in Houston, and I'm finishing up my workout, and as I'm leaving the gym, I get a text alert from the local radio station, because I remember this is where I got all my Rockets news from, right? Because I wasn't on Twitter, and I wasn't getting my news from there. I was getting my news from basically the local radio stations. They texted you the alerts, and I got an alert that the Houston Rockets had traded for James Harden, and this was a huge surprise to me, because they traded essentially all the assets that they were going to trade for Dwight Howard and Andrew Bynum, and this was like, and I was absolutely dumbfounded, because, you know, James Harden was unproven at the time. He was not a bona fide all-star. He was a sixth man of the year candidate. I mean, he won sixth man of the year. Granted, a lot of people viewed him as somebody who could potentially have his own team one day, but that was in nerdy basketball Twitter land, right? This is where I wasn't part of that. I wasn't a part of nerdy basketball Twitter at that time. I did not share that opinion. I was not on Twitter. I was not, you know, a part of that. And so they basically blew all their assets on James Harden. And this sparked a lot of controversy, because, again, they traded Jeremy Lamb. This is supposed to be their future star, right? Like, a lot of fans viewed him as the next best shooting guard, like, for the Rockets, right? Whether he'd live up to it or not, that's basically what Jeremy Lin was viewed at. He was their best asset. Kevin Martin, who was probably going to be their best scorer this year, a conditional first-round draft pick, Toronto owned, a 2013 second-round draft pick, Charlotte owned, and a conditional 2012 first-round draft pick, and a TPE. And the Rockets got back Cole Aldrich, Daquan Quick, Laser Hayward, and James Harden, of course. and yeah, this was big. This was big. And at the time, I didn't know how to feel about it. I remember James Harden being good enough to make the Team USA squad. So I kind of assumed he'd be an all-star caliber player. I did not assume he'd be, you know, what he is now. I will not lie to you and say I had any idea he'd become this good, but I thought he'd be a fringe all-star player. I thought he'd be an all-star player, you know, probably make the all-star team, maybe not this year, but next year with some development. And boy, was I wrong. You know, James Harden started off the season going crazy those first two games. Teams didn't know how to defend him, and because of that, he just went off. And he had a chip on his shoulder. He had something to prove that, yes, I am this good. Yes, I do deserve this max extension that the Rockets just gave me. And, you know, Daryl Morey came out and said, this is our guy. This is our franchise guy. And the rest is history. And, again, this is one of those moments in Rockets history where you absolutely remember where you were when this happened. And this is one of those things that changes the course of NBA history. It changes it. You know, Kevin Durant is probably, it might still be in Oklahoma City if, you know, James Harden had never gotten traded, right? And they might have won a championship by now. I'm not going to say they will, because, you know, you can never say you can never have absolutes in the NBA, right? And yeah, it completely changed the dynamic of the Houston Rockets, because they finally had their superstar, and they made the Western Conference Finals again, you know, 2 years ago. They have a lot of success under James Harden, and yeah, it's a big day in Rockets history, and I felt it was necessary to have a podcast on it. And more than anything, I'd love to have a sit down and interview with Daryl Morey and him be candid about this one day, because Daryl Morey, like, I swear to God, he only had like 2 hours of sleep this entire summer, because he was just going crazy with the amount of moves he was making, the amount of transactions he was making. Like, his back was against the wall, and he had to make a move. And this was, he'll never admit it, but he was absolutely on the hot seat that summer. He was absolutely on the hot seat that summer if he had not gotten this thing, if he had not gotten a superstar traded. And eventually the Rockets, you know, James Harden ends up being an all-star that year. I think he was first team All-NBA that first year. And and he makes the all-star team, obviously. And the Rockets land Dwight Howard the next year. And yeah, the rest is history. And major day in franchise history. And I felt it was necessary to have a portion of the podcast dedicated to it. It looks like it's going to be probably a good chunk, probably the majority of the podcast, but the first half is going to be dedicated to the game breakdowns for this week. And yeah, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us a good rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the podcast. Give us 5 stars. If you didn't enjoy the podcast, give us 5 stars anyways, because that's just the right thing to do. All right, guys, good night.
Yo, everybody get up. Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost the sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.